it's a good weekend. The Illini won the football game. It's good. Man, they crushed them that time of year. Football starting. Glad everybody's here and to be together on this Sunday morning. A lot of stuff happening. Rain came. Hey, remember I mentioned about a couple months ago, I went to the Starved Rock State Park. Anyone remember that? I went to Starved Rock. Our Army Reserve unit went there together. Has anyone been there to Starved Rock State? Oh, a lot of people been there. Okay, beautiful park. You know, it's about, what, an hour, hour and a half. It's a little bit southwest of Chicago on the Illinois River. Huge place to go and to visit and to see. But anyway, we were there, and legend has it, they told us that Starved Rock got its name from back in 1769. When there was a tribal war going on between the Ottawa and the Potawatomi. Is that right? Potawatomi Indian tribes. Sounds good to me. Indian tribes, and they had a war against the Illini or Illiniwek Indian tribe. All right? And so they're having tribal war. Well, the Ottawa and Potawatomi Indian tribes ganged up against the Illini Indian tribe, and they overpowered them, and they chased them to this huge butt, or another word for a big piece of rock, granite hill, and they chased them up this hill. And after all the Illini were up on this hill, the Potawatomi and Ottawa Indian tribes surrounded the hill, and they stayed there, and they stayed there, and they stayed there, and stayed there even longer until all the Illini Indians died of starvation on the rock. And therefore its name, Starved Rock. Anyway, we were there, and I want you to know, this is what I got a picture. This is what I looked like about 20 minutes into our adventure there at Starved Rock. You can come, there we go. There I is. That's 20 minutes, all right. It's 20 minutes. Beautiful day. Yeah, look hungry. Yeah, I'm starving too. Look hungry, rock in the background, just awesome. 20 minutes. All right, and this is what it looked like 4 hours later. Okay, that's me 4 hours later. I passed out. Man, nothing. I was wore out. I was tired out. I was hiked out. I was camped out. I was toast. I was dead. But the whole time, and so about 20 minutes, Starved Rock was awesome. An hour into it, starting to push me. 4 hours later, we went through the whole thing, and I was dying. But the whole time we were in Starved Rock, it was just an incredible place of beauty. And I was soaking it all in, the trees, the birds, the sunlight, just the plants, the animals, just beautiful, taking it. It was a wonderful day hiking through the woods. And until we got close to the end of our camping trip, if you want to call it that, our adventure as our unit there. We got closer to the end, and then our leader stopped. He looked at his map. He looked at his watch, and he said, uh-oh, we've got 1 hour to make up 2 hours of ground here. Let's go. And man, I had been hiking for 3 hours, and now we've got to hike in 1 hour, what it normally takes 2 hours. And so we took off. And my unit is ahead of me, and because I'm the oldest man in the unit, I was at the very end of it. And I was doing my best to keep up, but as we were going along, the man right in front of me, the soldier right in front of me, the second oldest man in the unit, I remember him stopping and saying, you know, isn't a shame that we're hiking too so fast that we can't enjoy the beauty all around us. And I think in our lives, a lot of times we're so distracted. We cannot see and are blind to what God is doing everywhere that surrounds us. And today we're going to talk about aware. And we're going to look at a story from Jesus' life and see how he was always aware of everything that was happening around him, and he was always open to it and ready to bring whatever God wanted to bring to him. The year is about 31 AD. Jesus is early in his ministry. And we see this amazing story in his awareness of all things. From the book of Matthew, book of Mark, chapter 5, verse 21. Mark, chapter 5, verse 21. And when Jesus had again crossed over by boat to the other side of the lake, a large crowd gathered around him while he was by the lake. Then one of the synagogue rulers named Jairus came there, seeing Jesus, fell at his feet. You know, I look at this and I'm reading and I wonder what's happening here. You know, what is going on here? Because this just doesn't make sense. You know, Jairus is one of the rulers of the synagogue, the church. He was responsible for all the administrative matters of the synagogue. He was responsible for the upkeep of the facilities. He oversaw the worship services that would take place each Sabbath day. And he would assign duties to different people, what they would be doing, singing, serving, how opening the doors, whatever they needed to do, he would assign their duties. He was the one of the rulers of the synagogue, and he was a very important person in the church, in the synagogue, in the community, in his area. And so people would have to make appointments to come see Jairus, and when they came to see him, they would be the ones falling down on the ground, bowing down to him. They would bow down to Jairus. But here we see Jairus falling down on the ground, bowing down to Jesus. Jairus never did that. But we find the reason why. Because he pleaded earnestly with Jesus. My little daughter is dying. Please come and put your hands on her so that she will be healed and lived. Jairus was a respected man, but this moment in this space, he was a desperate father. So Jesus went with him, and a large crowd followed and pressed around him. See, when Jesus was by the lake, did the crowd gather around him? But now it's gotten more personal. For now, not only are they gathering around him, they're pressing in close around upon him. They're surrounding him, but not only they're surrounding him, they're smothering him. You ever been to a rock concert or some kind of social gathering? And everybody just standing there and it's like one big mob, and they're pushing in on you, and they're rubbing against you, and it's like they're crushing each other. You ever been there? Man, I don't do well in those kind of situations. When I feel people pushing in close to me, I said, man, quit touching me, man. Quit touching me. What are you trying to do? It's like I'm trying to, it's making me uncomfortable. And I start checking. I make sure they're not trying to take my wallet. I'm checking for my keys. I'm checking for my belt. I'm checking for everything because all these people are making me anxious and anxious, and they're pushing around me. And so you know what I do? I don't know what you do. You know what I do? I expand my space. I just make myself bigger than I normally am and trying to just, like a rooster. You ever seen roosters? Expand my space, make some room for me so I won't feel quite so anxious and anxious. And you know why we do that as people, as individuals? It's because as human beings, we each have around us these boundaries called our personal space. Right? We have these concentric circles of personal space, just part of being a human being. And in the circles we have, those that are close to us and love us, they are allowed to into our closest circle. Those who are our friends, they have their own personal space boundary. You know, that boundary where we let them come in but don't go any further closer to us. And if they step past that boundary, they're making us anxious. But then we also have that larger circle around us, personal space for strangers, that they have to stay on the outside of that. If they come in beyond that, we really get uncomfortable. We were at Walmart yesterday shopping, Carol and I, and I was shopping, and I'm looking at the groceries on the shelf, and this lady gets, I'm sitting there minding my own business, and she moves into my personal space. And I'm looking at her trying to buy whatever she wants to buy, and I want to say, ma'am, you're in my personal space. You need to back up. But we all have these different zones of personal space. And when people come into them, they make us anxious and anxious and take us off our game. And here we have Jesus. He's Jesus. He is Jairus, this guy, this desperate father on the ground in front of him begging for his daughter. Jesus has the crowd that's pressing up all around him so closely and cramping his style. But it doesn't faze Jesus. You know, because he's always aware of what's going on around him. And Jesus simply goes with Jairus because he's aware of his surrounding, and he always chooses and is able to engage it. And so he begins to travel with Jairus to the little girl. Verse 25. And a woman was there who had been subject to bleeding for 12 years. She had suffered a great deal under the care of many doctors and had spent all she had, yet instead of getting better, she grew worse. You know, how discouraging is that? Bleeding, hemorrhaging for 12 years. She had been sick for 12 years. She had not been herself for 12 years. She had not felt healthy for 12 years. Man, I can't stand being sick for 12 minutes, much less 12 years. And she had suffered horribly under the care of many doctors. All kinds of treatments. It's sort of like, you know, what happens with us today. We go to see our doctor, and we've got something strange going on with us, and we go to our primary care physician, and he or she doesn't know or can't figure out what's wrong with us, so they run tests. And they get the results of the tests back. But they don't know what to do with it, so what do? They send us to a specialist in the area that we think we need to be treated in. A neurologist, an endocrinologist, a gastroenterologist, and who knows what it is, ologist, all right? All these different specialists they send us to try to figure out what is wrong. And so we go see the specialist, and they examine us and try to figure things out, and they give us blood tests. And they get the results back. And if they can't figure out what to do, well, then the Christie doctor sent us to the Carl specialist, and the Carl specialist sent us to the Christie specialist, and they run more tests, and they still can't figure out what to do with us. So they sent us to more specialists, and they sent us down to Barnes, and we go down to Barnes, and they run all kinds of tests, and we make multiple trips and trying to figure out what is wrong and what's going on with us, and spend all kinds of money trying to discern what needs help here, and they can't figure it out. So they say, hey, we can't help you. We'll send you up to Mayo, up in Rochester, Minnesota, and see what if they can figure out. We know because we've been there. And this woman had traveled all the way to Mayo Clinic. And they could not help her. She had spent all her money, all her resources, all the mental and physical energy she had to go all the way up to the best of the best of the best, and they couldn't help her, and she's out of money, she's out of hope, and there's so many people in our world who have no money and no hope. But when she heard about Jesus, she came up behind him in the crowd and touched his cloak, because she thought, if I just touch his clothes, I will be healed. Immediately her bleeding stopped, and she felt in her body that she was freed from her suffering. At once Jesus realized that power had gone out from him, and he turned around in the crowd and asked, who touched my clothes? The power had gone out from him. You know, all the chaos and all the noise and Jairus pleading with him and the people pushing around him, Jesus was still aware of the need of this woman to be healed by him. You know, a lot of people like to be associated with Jesus, but not everyone wants to be healed and be changed by Jesus. You know, it's like a person who sees a movie star or a rock star or an athletic star on the street. And used to, you'd run up there and ask for their autograph, right? That's what you used to. Hey, could I have your autograph? Wow. But what do people do now? They write, hey, can we take a selfie together? Man, can we do a selfie? My friends won't believe that I just saw you. Can we take a selfie? So the person runs up to the movie star or rock star, and they try to get them. They want to make sure they look good. They don't care what the movie star looks like. They want to make sure they look good. And they take the selfie, and then the movie star goes on their way, and the person goes on their way, and their paths never cross again. And there are a lot of people who like to be associated with Jesus, who have the blessings of being associated with Jesus, who have some kind of casual relationship with Jesus. And the crowd was pressing around Jesus, trying to get their selfies with Jesus, but the woman needed to be healed by Jesus. And only Jesus was aware of it. You see the crowd, people crowding against you, his disciples answered. And yet you can ask, who touched me? Jesus was aware of his surrounding. He engaged it. He was aware of this woman's need for healing, her need, and he met it. But beyond all this, Jesus was aware of God's will, and he did it. Verse 32. But Jesus kept looking around to see who had done it. Then the woman, knowing what had happened to her, came and fell at his feet, trembling with fear, told him the whole truth. The reason Jesus knew the woman had been healed, because the healing that the woman experienced came out of Jesus. This is the cost of healing. Every time Jesus healed somebody, it took something out of him. You know, I've heard a lot of pianists play and watched them playing the pianos and things like that, and all the pianists are technically proficient. Boy, they can make the keys sing and just play just phenomenally. But the best pianists, they're the ones that they play and put themselves to the music to such a great extent, and they give it all that they can, that once they are done with their performance, it's almost like everything has gone out of them and they can't even begin to play another note. And I've watched a lot of NBA basketball players, and they're all good. If they weren't good, they wouldn't be an NBA basketball player. But the best NBA basketball players are those players that when they play the game, they give it everything they have until the last second goes off and the horn sounds, and they put so much of themselves into it that they don't have anything left and that they can barely walk off the court. And if we're going to do anything great in life, it's going to take something out of us. If we're going to do the things that God wants us to do, it's going to have to come out of us and flow out of us, and we're going to have to give ourselves to those around us who need us. And Jesus was aware of God's will for this woman. But beyond that, he was aware of God's will for the world. Jesus was aware that God wanted to heal the world that was hurting. Jesus was aware that God wanted to mend the world that was broken. Jesus was aware that God wanted to save the world that was suffering. And because Jesus was aware of God's will, Jesus was willing to give his all, take the nails, go to the cross, and die for it. Jesus said to her, "Daughter, your faith has healed you. Go in peace and be freed from your suffering." Being aware of God's will for your life means that you will realize and understand it will take something from you. It will cost you your life, your soul. But it's worth it. It's worth it. Just ask the woman that Jesus healed that day. Like this woman, Jesus wants to heal us. Heal us of our regrets. Heal us of our sin. Heal us of our past that won't let us go. Heal us for a future that won't let us in. But for Jesus to heal us, we have to be willing to give Jesus our life. Say, "Jesus, I give you my life. I give you my life." Because Jesus was willing to give his life for you.